The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Okay, so we're going to talk. I'm going to explore mindfulness with you this evening. And part of my inspiration for this comes because I was teaching a retreat last week where the topic was the Buddha's teachings on mindfulness, the four foundations of mindfulness. And I've noticed an interesting thing that seems to happen here at IMC. It's not at all intentional, but it seems that these waves of themes kind of come through. And like I know Gil's talked about mindfulness recently. He's talking about the four foundations of mindfulness some, and now it's in my thread. And I noticed that at other times we've kind of converged on a theme, very similar times. So it's happening again. I'll start by just kind of talking more generally about mindfulness, what kind of more in general terms, what mindfulness is, and then I'll explore a little bit about what the Buddha said about mindfulness and this establishing of mindfulness in the four foundations of mindfulness, his main meditation instructions that he left for us. So mindfulness, actually the last few days I've been teaching a morning session, and somebody in that class has asked, you know, what is mindfulness? And it's a great question because, you know, it's not necessarily completely clear, and people actually have different ways of talking about this word. And so I'm going to talk about it from my perspective, how I practice with it, what I understand about it. And one of the kind of first things I understand about it is that it is, the way I talk about it is that it is kind of a sense of knowing what's happening while it's happening. So it's awareness in the present moment of what's happening in the present moment. This is a very kind of basic definition. So that awareness just allows us to know very simply what's happening here and now. So right now, you know, are you aware that you're sitting here? Are you aware of the pressure of your buttocks? Are you aware of the sound of my voice? So just really simply, that awareness is in the field of what mindfulness is. So awareness, a kind of sense of presence, awareness, a witnessing, a knowing, being present. These words are all kind of in the terrain of mindfulness. The quality of mindfulness itself is a really ordinary quality of mind. It's not anything that the that's obscure or a strange quality. It's just a normal way that our minds work. Our minds have this capacity to be aware of what's happening in the present moment. It's just a normal functioning of our mind. It's so normal, in fact, that sometimes we don't recognize that our minds are doing it. It's almost like swimming in, like a fish swimming in water, you know, that it's so common, this aspect of our minds being able to recognize what's happening in the present moment, that we don't actually highlight or recognize this function, this capacity, this ability of our minds to be aware. So that that's one of the things I think the Buddha was, I think it was an amazing thing that he pointed out. He said, you know, this quality, this is a really helpful quality. And I'll get to the whys of why it's so helpful in a little while. So this quality of mindfulness is just an ordinary quality of mind. It's this capacity. I sometimes think of it as a self-reflexive capacity, kind of like our mind can be like a mirror, just reflecting what's happening. We don't typically notice this quality of mind because what our training is, the way we live our lives, and I think I talked about this a couple weeks ago, the way we live our lives is that when we become aware of something, when mindfulness happens to us, because it does, it happens to us a lot in our day, when mindfulness happens to us, we typically are interested in the thing that we've become mindful of. We're interested in, you know, we're walking down the street and we see a beautiful bird. And we start, we look at the bird, we're interested in the bird. We're interested in what kind of bird it is. And then, a car drives by and we're thinking about getting a new car. So we look at the car. Is that the kind of car I'm interested in? So we've been aware of what's happening around us, but very quickly our minds kind of go into the agendas, the ideas, the opinions, the tasks that we're doing, and how this thing that I've become aware of relates to that. So we go out of the present moment by, thinking about, kind of wandering out of the present moment, by thinking about what we've noticed in the present moment. So this quality of being aware of what's happening in the present moment, it's completely necessary for our survival. We couldn't get through our day without it. But we rarely actually notice that quality ourselves. I mean, walking down the street, we need this capacity to know what's happening in the present moment so that we can navigate, cracks on the sidewalk and not walk into trees and, not get hit by cars. So this capacity to know what's happening around us is kind of functioning all the time. But we're not noticing it as a phenomenon in and of itself. We're not noticing that we're being mindful. We're not noticing that mindfulness is happening because we're more interested in how does it relate to me? What am I doing about it? So the Buddha actually pointed to this quality and said, this is a really helpful quality. When we use it in a particular way, as opposed to trying to further our agendas, further our aims of our lives, when we use this quality in a particular way, cultivate it in a particular way, it can really help us to become happier. It can really support us to understand how we get caught up in our habits and patterns that lead us to anger, irritation, cruelty, hostility, all of these afflictive emotions that we suffer over and that others in the world suffer over when we're engaging in them. The Buddha said that using mindfulness will help us to free ourselves from these patterns, from these ways that we get stuck. So he talked about mindfulness in a particular way. He didn't just say, oh, be aware of what's going on around you. He said, be aware of your experience from a particular perspective. So everything in our experience, he said, be aware of everything that's happening. But he encouraged us to look at our experience in a particular way. And this is what his teachings on the Four Foundations of Mindfulness are. How is it helpful to look at our experience? And so this brings in another aspect that one of my teachers often says, awareness alone is not enough for us to become happier human beings. If we're just aware of things that are happening around us. I mean, we can be walking down the street and being aware of what's going on and still be caught in our agendas around, wanting to get the next great thing in my life to make me more wealthy or to have more status or have people love me or whatever it is that we think is going to make us happy. So we can be operating with those agendas and being aware of what we're doing, and it's not going to lead us towards this letting go of these patterns. So the Buddha had said, there's a specific way to look at our experience that will really serve you, really help you to become more truly happy. True happiness is the the goal, perhaps we could say, of the meditation, of our practice, this happiness that comes not from trying to endlessly construct our world to make us get what we want, but rather comes more from letting go and allowing more the recognition that the cycle that we're on to try to get what we want is a cycle of contraction. It's both a cycle of contraction and distraction. It's like our minds are alternating between these two patterns. We contract trying to hold on to things, and we're distracted trying to find out what's the next thing that's going to make me happy. And then we're contracted, try to hold on, and then we're distracted. What's the next thing that's going to make me happy? And we kind of live in this contraction, distraction, contraction, distraction. And it's, you know, it's a cycle. And between contraction and distraction, for a few minutes, we might have a little bit of release, a little bit of ease. Oh, I got what I want. Oh, that feels good. Oh, but what's next? What's the next thing? And we're distracted again, or we're contracted. Oh, I've got this thing that I want. For a moment, we're happy. And it's, how do I keep this? How can I keep other people from getting it? How can I keep it from breaking or getting lost or stolen? So we contract around it. And this contraction is uncomfortable. It's unsatisfying. The distraction is also uncomfortable, dissatisfying. And yet we live alternating between these two, without knowing that there's a possibility of something else, of another way of living, of letting go of that cycle of trying to keep getting the next thing, of rather seeing what does it mean to rest here and now? What might it mean to take care of my needs, my basic needs, and then see what it's like to let go of extra, all of the things that we add, trying to one-up our neighbors. I spent 2 years in the Peace Corps in a country that is called Vanuatu. It's in the middle of the South Pacific. And they have very little money there. They have what they need, partly because of the climate. It's an island in the South Pacific, and it's not overpopulated, so the land provides. You know, they don't need money, actually. They don't need much money. If they don't have any money, they can survive on the land, build their houses out of the trees, and they've got fish in the water, and so they're provided for by the land. And at one point, I think it was about 4 or 5 years ago, I saw this article that said Vanuatu is the happiest place on earth, that the people there are just happier in general. When, you know, asked how are you, you know, they're happy. They don't have much, but, you know, they have what they need, and there's not much else to really go for. So, you know, just that sense of just being with the, you know, what's necessary, and taking care of the needs, that there can be a real relaxation around the way that we live our life. So the Buddha pointed to mindfulness in a certain way. Mindfulness in a certain, what's the right word? Attending to experience in a certain way, being mindful in a certain way, can help us to find this happiness. And so his instructions were around looking at our experience through kind of four different lenses, and said, you know, first, you know, establish mindfulness in the body. That's one place to cultivate this mindfulness. Establish mindfulness around the feeling of experience, and not emotional feeling here, but just the kind of basic whether experience is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Establish mindfulness in that area also. And then establish mindfulness in how our mind is relating to experience. Do we like what's happening? Do we not like what's happening? Are we confused about what's happening? Is there a contracted or distraction around what's happening? Is the mind settled, at ease, or confused and not able to be still? So he talked about noticing how our mind is with experience. So, you know, at whatever's going on in our experience, these three areas, paying attention to the body, paying attention to feelings, paying attention to how the mind is, they actually cover all of our experience. So whatever's happening in our experience, we can recognize, well, how does it impact the body? Whatever's happening in our experience, we can notice whether there's pleasantness, unpleasantness. Whatever's happening in our experience, we can recognize, how am I with this? Pain, painful knee, not liking, don't like that. Lovely sunset, pleasant, like that. Want more, want to take a picture, want to hold it, want to keep it forever. Greed. So that we see how our minds relate to experience. So those three areas are the kind of basic exploration of our experience. He said, establish mindfulness in these areas. The fourth foundation of mindfulness is, it's harder to describe in a simple way, but it's basically about looking at the processes of our mind and how do these other three areas interrelate. So how does the mind impact the body? Anger arises in the mind. And what happens? The body gets tight and tense. So there's a cause and effect relationship between the mind and the body. The body gets injured, cut ourselves with a knife. Mind reacts to that. So there's cause and effect relationship. So this fourth foundation is about beginning to explore the cause and effect relationships between experience, and then in particular being interested in the causes and effects that help us to let go of the ways that we get stuck and help us to cultivate the qualities, the beautiful qualities of mind that lead us towards a more open heart. So cultivating qualities like investigation and tranquility and joy and concentration. So this fourth foundation of mindfulness says, you know, look at what happens to your mind when you're caught in anger and aversion. What's the consequences of that? And then look at what happens to your mind as you're cultivating mindfulness and cultivating tranquility of mind, and what happens there. And we begin to see, as we observe the interrelationships, we begin to see that the mind and body feel much more in tune, kind of aligned, when we're letting go of the qualities of mind that are associated with greed, with aversion, with delusion, and cultivating those qualities of mind that are associated with non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion. So the very process of observing the interrelationships between experience, the mindfulness begins to give us an education that it gives our minds and bodies an education of what actually leads to well-being. We see, we feel viscerally that we're in that contraction distraction pattern. It doesn't feel very good. We get a real good sense of that. When we feel the open heart, when we feel our minds connecting to experience without contraction, when there's calm and joy, the heart feels at ease, relaxed, the mind and body inherently, intuitively know this way lies happiness. Contraction, distraction, that way lies struggle and suffering. So the mindfulness itself begins to help us to understand which things are more helpful for us, what direction serves us. So those four areas of mindfulness the Buddha encouraged us to look at. So pay attention to the body, pay attention to feelings, pay attention to the mind, and pay attention to the processes, the interrelationships between all of them. And then one of the main inspirations for this talk, I'm finally getting to it, is one sentence in this text, one sentence in this sutta, where he talks about kind of the attitude to establish to pay attention to these various things. And I'll read this this sentence to you, and then I'll talk about the various words in it. So he says, how do we establish mindfulness? Four ways. What are the four? One abides, contemplating the body as a body, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. So that's one of his instructions. Abides, contemplating the body as a body, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. And then he repeats that sentence for the other four areas. Abides, contemplating feelings as feelings. Abides, contemplating mind as mind. Abides, contemplating phenomena as phenomena. The word is a little hard to translate it. People translate it in different ways for that fourth foundation. So this sentence, while I was teaching this retreat last week, I got really interested in this sentence. And what is it saying to us? And so I thought I'd explore that with you a little bit. So the first word there that is interesting to me is the one that I brought into the guided meditation, abides. So abides, he's encouraging us to rest in mindfulness, rest in the contemplation of these areas of experience. And so in the guided meditation, I was encouraging you to have a sense, dropping that word in, abiding, dwelling in mindfulness in the body. Does that word evoke anything for you? Does it have any resonances for you? What does that word mean for you? Just call something out if you. I can repeat it if you.
Home.
Mm-hmm. That's a great one. You know, so, can we be at home in our experience?
Abides.
Mm-hmm. Does it evoke anything for you? Abides or dwells, that's another word that's sometimes translated as that.
Contentment.
That's a beautiful one. Yeah, because it's like when we think about abiding, it's like there's not a lot of stuff needing to happen. It's like, whew, kind of that contentment, resting in a way. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What did you say?
Being happy with
what you have. Okay, uh-huh. It's here. A birth, earth abides. It's here. So to me, that aspect of it brings in a sense of, you know, it's not something to work at, you know. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, we can work at mindfulness. I mean, it is possible to kind of keep reminding ourselves, but I think ultimately mindfulness is a dwelling. It is an abiding. It's a resting in. Anything else that it evokes? This word dwelling. Yeah. Do you want to speak into the mic? You're going to speak for a little bit longer. Oh, it's up here, Maureen.
There was an interview that I heard with Jeff Bridges and Bernie Glassman, and talking about the Big Lebowski, Jeff Bridges, was it? And how there were all of these sort of Buddhist teachings.
I'll have to watch the film.
In the movie. And as evidence of that, they talked about the Big Lebowski's, you know, sort of mantra was the dude abides.
The dude abides. Oh, somebody said that the other day. I didn't know what they were referring to.
They've actually, the two of them have actually come out with a book about this. Uh-huh. So anyway, that's what came to my mind.
So if that if there's something there for you in that, you know, the dude abides. Yeah. The dude abides. Okay. You know, it does have a sense of chilled back, right? So to me, this notion of abiding, it brings in a more kind of receptive quality to awareness, in a way, to this mindfulness. This is one important aspect of mindfulness. And I talked about mindfulness being kind of like a mirror in a way. A mirror sits there, it just reflects. It doesn't have to do any work to reflect. And in a way, our mind is kind of like that too. Our mind is kind of naturally aware of something. And what often, I think, one thing that gets confused with mindfulness, a factor or quality in the mind that is confused with mindfulness, is the factor of attention. We can choose to pay attention to something. We can choose to say, I'm going to notice the breath. I'm going to pay attention to hearing. We can direct our attention in that way. That joins with mindfulness, that quality or that capacity of directing the attention joins with mindfulness, and I'll get to that in the next phrase in this sentence, because the Buddha says, you know, notice the body, notice feeling. So that's in a way directing the attention. But that directing of the attention is a separate thing from the mindfulness itself. We can, in fact, choose, for instance, to direct our attention to the breath and then abide with the breath. So the directing of the attention is a separate piece. And this kind of receptive quality, the mindfulness, I see mindfulness as being kind of a natural receptor. The natural receptive antenna, you know, we're naturally receiving in a way. And we can choose to direct our attention, choose what to pay attention to. Often I think we do more of that directing. That's what we've learned. That's, in a sense, that's how we begin to cultivate mindfulness, by choosing to pay attention to something. And then we get, like what Bill was talking about earlier, you know, earlier in his practice, more of that sense of directing the attention, choosing what mindfulness is supposed to be paying attention to. And that helps us to begin to get familiar with what the quality of mindfulness is, what with being present in the present moment. But being present doesn't require any directing of attention. So that's something to kind of notice, that distinction. So abiding. The next piece is contemplating the body as a body. So abiding, kind of that receptive quality, that at home, content, here aspect of experience. And then we look at the experience, or we do use our attention to observe in a specific way. And this phrase, contemplates the body as a body, that's kind of a funny phrase in a way. But there's a little bit of help for us in the commentaries, the people who looked at these words, figured out what they meant. One of the things that it says in the commentaries about this is that we become clear in observing the body as a body. We become clear, first piece is that we begin to recognize the body as distinct from things it might be confused with. And that's a funny kind of thing to say, but actually we confuse our body with concepts, with ideas. The actual body, the actual experience of body is just the sensations of the body. It's just vibration and tingling and pulsing and heat and coolness and moisture and pressure and hardness and softness. That's what the body experiences. When we recognize or think of our body in terms of hand and leg and foot and head, we're thinking of it in terms of concept. And we live a lot through concept. This is hard to actually see. But this is beginning to point, the Buddha is suggesting, helpful to observe our experience with as much access to what's actually happening as opposed to through our concepts. So rather than, you know, if you look at your hand and think about it as a hand, you know, I'm not, when I do that, you know, I don't feel too much in the way of body sensation. When I feel into hand, instead of let go of the idea of hand and feel into it, there's more the sense of the body. There's the vibration, the tingling, the pulsing, the coolness, the pressure, the movement. That's the actual experience. Relating to it through the concept of hand, that direct experience becomes diminished. So we often actually relate to experience through concept. So that's one thing that's being pointed to here. Notice the body in and of itself. That's a way another person translated that phrase. Notice the body in and of itself. Letting go of the concepts about the body. Just what is the experience of body? And likewise with the others. Feelings is feelings, mind is mind. Noticing feelings in and of themselves. Another thing that the body and mind actually get conflated. Body and mind get confused. You know, we might have a mental reaction to something. Like if you have a pain, for instance, in your body, there's often a kind of contraction in the mind around that pain. And that contraction in the mind leads to kind of an exacerbation of the pain in a way. You know, we can kind of contract around the pain as well. The mental contraction leads to a physical contraction. And there can be conflation between the contraction in the mind and the contraction in the body. We begin to recognize that distinction when we begin to look at, okay, what's happening right now? There's the pain in the body. Oh, there's this not liking. Oh, let me look at that not liking, that aversion to experience. We begin to distinguish what body is from what mind is. And in that mindfulness, that distinguishing the difference between them, we may see, for even just a moment, the contraction of mind, the not liking, the wanting to get rid of, the needing to fix, the change, that whole mental activity. Maybe for just a moment you see it, whew, stop. And then you see, oh my gosh, just how different the entire experience is when that mental contraction isn't there. And how confused the mind and body were. I've had experiences like this around a frozen shoulder where the pain in the shoulder was... actually, I felt like there was a pain throughout the whole body when the shoulder was frozen. And through observing this whole thing, I saw at some point that there was a contraction in the mind, that holding, bracing, kind of a whole bracing feeling. And for a moment, the bracing in the mind let go. And the entire body stopped having that kind of pain in it. So it was quite remarkable just how tight the coupling between mind and body was. So we can confuse mind and body. And this observation of looking at these different foundations helps us to clarify and to be less confused about it. And the benefit of that piece particularly is that when we see how the contraction of the mind, when we see the release of that contraction, we viscerally feel like we've been let go out of a vice grip, and so much more ease in our whole being when the mind releases that craving, that desire for things to be other than they are, that we begin to really know that the most of our suffering, most of our struggles lie in that very contractedness. It's not in what's happening, it's in our relationship to it. And so we distinguish what's actually happening in body from what's going on in the mind, and we begin to tease that all apart and see the pathway towards letting go of that contraction, letting go of that grip. So this contemplating the body as a body, the Buddha, I think, is encouraging us here to be in the present moment with actual experience. What's actually happening here and now, as opposed to our thoughts about it, our ideas about it, our agendas about it. So that's, to me, what that first part says. And then three more words: ardent, fully aware, and mindful. So ardent, that's kind of a funny word. Does anybody have a sense of ardent, what ardent means? Yeah. Work is coming in, but it's got passion in it. So anything else? I think it's got both of those, actually. It's got that sense of bringing in some meeting of experience. You know, kind of one person translates it as diligence. So kind of a bringing ourselves to meet experience. But it does have that connotation also of warmth and connectedness. Gil likes to translate this as wholehearted. So that's a beautiful way to phrase this. You know, it's you know, there's a heartfelt interest and connection. So, you know, ardent sometimes, you know, work brings in the sense of just chugging away. Wholehearted brings more of a sense of there's a kind of an inclination in that direction, or a wishing in that, or kind of an aspiration in that direction to meet experience. So a wholehearted meeting of our experience, heartfelt connection with experience. So it brings in the quality of the heart here, not just a mental thing. And this is an important piece. You know, actually, I don't remember if I said this recently, but my teacher in Burma, he was instructing me to pay attention to the mind at one point, and he said, pay attention to your mind. It's located in your chest, just to the left of center. I'm like, okay. Here, pay attention here. So there is more of a sense of mind-heart being connected in this practice. So not just up here. I think sometimes when we're thinking about being mindful, observing, aware, it's like we've got this watching, you know, little watchtower up here, you know. We're in our heads. And sometimes if we can drop into the heart, that can bring in the feeling of abiding, but it also can bring in that, you know, that sense of connecting. So another piece here that I want to highlight is we've got that abiding piece, that resting piece, that content piece, and yet there's also a sense of engagement. These two are not opposites. They can come together. We can abide, and to me, it kind of also brings in the sense of interest. Interest brings in that wholeheartedness of connection. When we're interested in something, there can be a kind of a care and a concern. That's another words, I think, that go along with ardency. Care and concern in the observing. like we're taking care of something by being with it. There's that sense of it with ardency. Then clearly comprehending, fully aware is the way it's translated here. Clearly comprehending is another way that term is translated. And this word, to me, there's kind of an extended teaching on it. I've given whole talks on this. Gil and I did a whole retreat. We gave 5 different talks on this topic, so we can really go into this one word. Sampajanya is the Pali, and you can talk about it for a long time. But essentially, the piece that it brings in is noticing or recognizing the purpose for which you're doing something. So to not lose track of the reason why you're engaged. And the purpose that the Buddha pointed to is freeing the heart from suffering. We're not being mindful to figure out how to build a better car, or to being mindful to, be more productive, or even to have better relationships. Although those things, the certain kinds of ordinary happiness is like, being more content with your partners and your relationships and your work. Those things happen as we practice mindfulness, but it's more almost side effect of the letting go of the wishing, wanting, trying to arrange, organize, fix, change, control, manipulate, all of that contraction, distraction pattern that we're so much in. The clear comprehension is about recollecting that the direction of our practice is towards this understanding. How do we get caught in suffering? How do we get caught in stress and dissatisfaction? And that these practices help us to see that, help us to understand that. So keeping in mind our aim, our purpose, the purpose to which this is directed. And I talked about mindful earlier, so I won't say any more about that. And in the last minute, I'll say something about this last part, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. Now, that part to me, we might not be able to get there right away. having put away distress and wanting for things of the world, but we can set it aside, perhaps, as we're practicing from time to time. We can see, to me, what this is pointing to, again, is how are we trying to meet our experience. We're not aiming at the purpose of getting things or getting rid of things. Our purpose is about understanding our minds. And the understanding will lead to that release of the covetousness and grief, the desire and the aversion for things that are happening. So to me, we can kind of try to approach our experience with that kind of an attitude, but that's the refinement that happens as we practice. The more we practice, the more we meet our experience with mindfulness, the more that greed and aversion begins to naturally let go in many ways, because our minds begin to understand the suffering of those patterns, begins to understand the suffering of the greed, of the aversion, and how much more easeful it is to let go of that. So, now I need to stop. Thank you for your attention.